Ball is life, plain and simple. You know, ask any baller. If you know, you know.
The game has changed, but it's still the same. You want it, go get it.
Damn.
The inbounds pass comes into Jordan. Here's Michael at the foul line, the shot on Elo.
No! The Bulls win! They win it!
Mike, you're honestly telling me that you're top five.
Yeah.
Top five of all time.
No question about it.
Booker, this is for the win. Got it. Wow. The ruling on the floor is made basket.
You know, one thing's for sure. Over at Valley Sports Plug, you're never going to catch us slipping.
With the first overall pick, the Phoenix Suns select.
3, 2, 1, yeah!
Welcome to Pass the Outlet, episode number 27. I'm your co-host, Michael Benjamin, joined as always by my wingman, Chris Patrick. Chris, how are you doing tonight?
Doing good, man. Playoff basketball has been exciting. Just watched the Indiana Pacers finish off the Cleveland Cavaliers, and it's primetime basketball season. Even though the Suns aren't in it, I'm excited to talk about it. How are you doing, bro?
I'm doing great, man. We got a full slate tonight. Obviously, if you're a basketball fan, we all know what happened last night. The 1.8% chance Dallas Mavericks miraculously win the 2025 NBA draft lottery. We got to look at what's going on in the NBA playoffs right now. Got some Valley ties, guys, when we're going into the outlet point guard. And then whatever else Chris has for us in Reddit Reacts. But before that, if you're joining us here live on the playback or listening on podcast streaming services, we appreciate y'all. We love y'all. Make sure you're following us at AZ_VSP on all socials. And it's time, man. Basketball never stops, and we are in the heart of it right now. But with that being said, we're going to start a little bit differently today. We've done it in the past, but Mr. Patrick has been making it out to runs a lot more recently, coming from the Far East Side. So I just wanted to do a little bit of a sneaker showing. If you guys can see behind me, you know, I'm a little bit crazy with it. But Chris, I made an action item for you. I got to see, what have you been playing in recently, man? Show the people what you got on feet.
Yes, sir. And I was just telling you, I'm actually looking for my next pair of kicks now. So if you guys have any recommendations, let me know in the comments. I was flirting with the idea of getting the KD17s on sale. Looks like I might have missed my chance at that. But hey, just means it wasn't meant to be. But Mike, yes, I have been getting out to runs again, trying to ramp up to hopefully play in an adult league again sometime soon here. I know out here in the Far East Side, as you called it, in Queen Creek, they just opened up their city's rec facility, and they're starting to have adult leagues out there. So that's going to be a little closer to home, but you know I don't mind traveling. But hey, that's a conversation for another day. I am still rocking some of my favorite shoes of all time. I got two pairs here that I played in recently. Now, I have honorable mention. I have played in the Book Ones. You got me those beautiful purple, bright purple Book Ones, and they're all right. They're all right. I know you didn't like them as much as a little bit of a bigger man, but for me as more of a guard size, I think they work out decently. But my favorite shoe of all time, I'll start with, is the Kyrie Sevens. I got these in the University Red. I know you got yourself a pair as well. I've seen you playing in them. Man, I will be so sad the day that I wear these out, because Nike, as you may know, is not affiliated with Kyrie anymore. They're no longer making Kyries at any capacity. But this by far is my favorite basketball shoe that I've ever played in. And I've been playing basketball since I was in single digits age-wise. Secondly, probably no shocker after that setup, Kyrie Infinities. I also got the Kyrie Infinities, Kyrie 8s, some people call them, but they are the Infinities. They got the Infinity logo on the bottom, the Kyrie signature. These are, I wouldn't even say slightly worse than the Kyrie 7s. They're just not as good as the Kyrie 7s, but I still enjoy playing with them. The only thing I don't like, as I'll do a little side-by-side here, is the Infinities are a little more puffy. I might not be doing this well. They're a little bit more puffy than the sevens. I like the sleekness of the sevens. These got a little bit of a thicker tongue. The eights do, or the infinities do, and a thicker heel. But honestly, Can't say I've really ever rolled my ankle in these, and that's one of my biggest concerns when I'm out there hooping. I have pretty weak ankles, historically speaking. But yeah, man, that's what I've been hooping in. But like I said, let me know. Mike, what about you, man? What have you been rocking?
I love it. I mean, you hit it right off the top. I'm still rocking the Kyrie 7s. I don't even know what this one is called, to be honest with you. I did want the Brooklyn Beats one, but if you try and find those on any of the resale sites, they are about $450. So I would get my money's worth out of it, right? But I will say I just was able to secure another pair of Kyrie 7s. I'll show you guys those next month. They're a little colorful. I'm kind of excited. And I got them for an absolutely killer price. So you can't beat that. But Chris touched on it again. This is probably the one that I'm playing in the most right now. The KD17s, the Easy Money Sniper, Slim Reaper colorway, all orange, nods to the Phoenix Suns. Adds a great color pop for any player on the court. And Chris, you know me, probably since the KD14s. I get every single model because they just, for somebody as fleet of foot as Kevin Durant is, he still is a big man at the end of the day. So it seems like the structure of these shoes have really just been built specifically for me as a bigger man who plays down low. So I will say, I'll pull it up in just a second. There's going to be another pair of KDs coming my way soon as well. But then an underrated sleeper that most people might not know about is the 361 Joker Ones. These are the first signature model from 361, which is a Chinese brand that has Nikola Jokic as a signature athlete. And this is the Joker colorway. This was a no-brainer for me. I'm a big Batman guy. I do go Marvel over DC, but Batman always is close to my heart. And having this type of colorway with the lime green, the purple, it was just a no-brainer for me. I will say with these, I had to switch out the laces. I think I have a pair of SB Dunk Low laces in right now, like kind of a little thicker here, because the shoelaces on this originally were just way too long. And when they tied right here, it just kind of cut into the ankle a little bit too much for me. But wanted to give something a try that was different, kind of out of my spectrum, obviously, because I'm pretty much a Nike guy, as you can tell behind me. But Chris did also touch on another one, the Book Ones. I've only ever played in the Havens, which is the black colorway right above me. You can't really see it. Not made for me, man. It was kind of disappointing. I played in them a good amount, but at first I kind of dealt with some heel slippage, unfortunately. And then the comfortability factor just wasn't there for me just because of how big I am, I think is the key factor in that. But I will say the Book Ones have been consistently in the top 10 of most worn game shoes by NBA players. So Book is on the up and up, and we already know the Book 2 is coming in, I believe, spring of 2026. So I can't wait for that. But I won't leave these out, even though I probably won't hoop in them. This one had to come into the collection. It's the All-Star Book Ones, the 1995 All-Star colorway. Wow. I mean, the awesome thing about what Devin Booker has been doing with Nike is the PEs that a lot of these signature athletes see never see the light of day to the masses, right? And he made it a point to start bringing those to the people. I think we started with the Forrest Gump colorway, the white, red, and blue. Then we have the Moabs that you can see right there as well. And then this absolutely was a no-brainer. I do have the Sunset purple, which is a lot darker of a purple. But come on, folks. I mean, you could almost put this together with the new Arizona Diamondbacks Serpientes jersey, make it out to a game at Chase Field, and you'll be looking fly as hell. But had to add that to the collection. And Chris, I will say, the other one that I was going to say, this is going to be my next pair of shoes. It's the KD18 Air Bacons. Please, right off the rip, tell me what you think about these. How are you feeling about these?
Air Bacon. Oh, I love it. That's a crazy look, honestly. I do kind of like, I don't, neither of these shoes on my desk are an example of it, but I like the lace loops, if you'll call them that, versus like just having like the eyelet. I think that can really, you know, make provide a real snug fit. The toe here is very interesting, where it's just not a supremely symmetrical shoe. But from this picture alone, man, I like the color scheme, red and yellow, red and gold, whatever you want to call it. McDonald's knows what they're doing. It's, I love the look, man. And Air Bacon, what a name, man.
Air Bacon, man. The main reason why I want to get these is obviously as the KD line continues to come out, he is a signature athlete that is signed for life with Nike. But the Air Bacons, Chris, were a very famous shoe that were made famous by Tim Hardaway in the late 90s, early 2000s. Here you can see him going up. I want to say that's Chris Childs. I'm not truly sure, but that was Tim Hardaway in his Heat days wearing the Air Bacons. And it's a very hard shoe to acquire because it just has not been retroed very much over the years. I know they did do Air Bacon Supreme kind of, you know, collaboration. I want to say maybe 2 years ago, which I did see on Whatnot and my size. It ended up going for an okay price, but it wasn't that classic red. So I'm very excited to get those. May 15th, it's already on my calendar. The Air Bacon KD18s will be making an appearance for Michael Benjamin on the floor shortly. But Chris, appreciate you bringing out your kicks for today. Wanted to just kind of check in. We'll probably do those every couple of months because unfortunately I might have a little bit of an addiction. So I normally have a lot of shoes kind of floating my way. But with that being said, Chris, it's time to get into the meat and potatoes of today's episode. And we have to start from the top with the 2025 NBA draft lottery. As most of us know, now infamously, the Dallas Mavericks having one of the lowest percentages to ever win the first pick. If you can see on this graphic here, on the right side, it says it has a couple of different teams that had the lowest odds to ever receive the number one pick, which was actually the lowest ever in 1993, was the Orlando Magic, who ended up taking Chris Webber, who I believe was infamously traded, and he went to the Washington Bullets at the time. That was before they had transitioned to the Wizards. But you got some other big names on here, man. Derrick Rose, the Chicago Bulls in 2008 with a 1.7% chance. Cleveland, which I think was a back-to-back year, with Andrew Wiggins at 1.7% in 2014. And then obviously we know after LeBron went to the Heat, the Cavs win the lottery in 2011 with a 2.8% chance and take Kyrie Irving, who it now seems like is going to be playing along with the future number one overall pick, Cooper Flagg from Duke. Chris, did Nico Harrison make a deal with the devil to get this number one overall pick? Please tell the people.
I mean, it's got to be something, right? It's either a deal with the devil or he is just the greatest GM and wizard in the history of the NBA. I don't know, man. Like I've been thinking about this a lot today, knowing that we were going to talk about it tonight. You know, been you know, absorbing the opinions from the internet and other pundits talking about it. And it's just my gut reaction is like, you know, this graphic alone, it's not a great, you know, the graphic on the left specifically, it's not a great look for the NBA. It lends people to put on their tinfoil hat and kind of be conspiratorial about it. But I mean, if you look at the graphic on the right, there is a precedent for low percentage chance teams getting a high draft pick, even going as far back as 1993. And I think it kind of blows up a little bit the narrative of tanking to get the number one pick, because there's no guarantee, because you could tank, be really bad, have the highest percentage, whatever it is, 25, 27, 28% chance to win it. And then this 1.whatever% team ends up 1.6% chance team comes out of nowhere and ends up getting it. But man, isn't it ironic, maybe I would say, that they give up a generational talent in Luka Doncic to an NBA darling and massive, one of the most massive market teams in the NBA as a you know, symbolic sacrifice to get this pick in Cooper Flagg. And again, as I'm absorbing other opinions and formulating my own, the consensus maybe is, I think the consensus is that Cooper Flagg is going to be a good Ion great player. Will he be a generational talent? I don't think Cooper Flagg is LeBron James level talent. I don't think we've seen a talent like that in a long time. The closest thing everyone thought was Zion Williamson, but he hasn't really, you know, manifested to be that. Luka Doncic wasn't even the number one overall pick, but he's secured himself as a, you know, pretty solid superstar. And clearly the Lakers think he's the future. I don't know, man. My gut reaction was, of course the West gets stronger. The rich get richer. The Mavs go and get themselves into a position where next year their starting lineup is going to look at Kyrie Irving, Cooper Flagg, Anthony Davis, and Klay Thompson, and whoever else, Daniel Gafford, or whoever they want to put in that last spot there. But man, it's just tough. It's the Western Conference is on top once again, and it only took a little bit of time to see that happen.
And the tough thing about it too, folks, is that the top two picks, right, with the Dallas Mavericks and the San Antonio Spurs are teams that are in transition. But specifically for the Spurs, man, you're talking about adding a top three talent to what is already being constructed as a quick rebuild team. And we already are, you know, you're looking at teams like the Oklahoma City Thunder, who still have draft capital. The Denver Nuggets are playing at an incredible rate, pushing them to probably a 7-game series. The Minnesota Timberwolves they got a lot of young pieces. Unfortunately for the Phoenix Suns, you find yourself falling back, especially after not having your first round pick available to you. And thank goodness that didn't end up being a top five pick, because I think a lot of us would have felt a lot worse after yesterday. If you're talking about the Houston Rockets, who's another young team that has another young core, adding a top five talent to that team as well. The Phoenix Suns have a very, very long road to come back to relevancy, I unfortunately feel like. And this just doesn't help, man. But look, so let's talk about the top 10 here for a second. So we said the Houston Rockets got the 10th pick via Phoenix. They had a 3.8% chance to win the top pick. Toronto was at 7.5% with the 9th pick. Brooklyn, poor Ian. They had the 9% chance, ended up with the 8th pick. But then the top four teams that had the highest percentage to win it end up 4 through 7. New Orleans at 7 with a 12.5% chance. Washington at 6 with 14%. Utah with 14%. And Charlotte with 14%. I mean, man, you got to feel bad for those fan bases. I would specifically say Charlotte and Utah, who have been in turmoil. Charlotte for probably the past 20 years. Utah ever since Donovan Mitchell left to the Cleveland Cavaliers. But, you know, man, miraculously, the Philadelphia 76ers have one crappy year where Joel Embiid is hurt once again, and they're going to find somebody to pair with their young core and Tyrese Maxey and McCain. Like, come on, folks. It's kind of crazy. Now, I'm not getting into the tinfoil hat too much, but you just look at kind of what has happened on this graphic here. How does this make sense to some degree? You know, LeBron 2010 signs with the Heat, Cavs win the lottery with a 2.8% chance. Chris Paul is traded, Pelicans win the lottery. Now, they had a higher percentage chance that year, looks like with 13.7%. And then Anthony Davis traded to the Lakers, Pelicans win the lottery. Luka Doncic traded to the Lakers, Mavericks win the lottery. It seems like the Los Angeles Lakers seem to be finding themselves within these scenarios a little bit too often for my liking. But man, if you're telling me that the Dallas Mavericks were able to win this draft lottery after making one of the worst trades that a lot of people have pinpointed possibly in NBA history, and they have something like this fall into their laps, I would say we've had a rivalry as Suns fans with the Mavericks over the past couple of years, but I still never really had like true like disdain or like a negative true taste towards Mavericks fans themselves. I always had the negativity towards Luka Doncic himself. So once he was traded, that kind of went to the wayside. So in the grand scheme of things, after what happened to that fan base, you can look at it as a positive. If you're looking from, you know, 30 feet in the air with no ties to it, But still, at the end of the day, as somebody who is invested in the Phoenix Suns and a Western Conference team, this is the worst possible case scenario. And I don't know what this does for the next couple of years, unfortunately, and if the Mavericks really catapult up quicker than we would have imagined. But Chris, I'll pass it over to you one last time. NBA draft, the lottery is coming up. We got a couple of key dates coming up here as well. The draft combine is going on right now, May 11th through the 18th. June 15th is the NBA early entry withdrawal deadline. And then obviously the new NBA draft, the first round will be on June 25th and the second round will be on June 26th. And I'm sure we'll dive more into it next month. But Chris, you got any last thoughts on the NBA draft lottery?
Yeah, man. I mean, it's just, kind of crazy to think about. We were sitting here 2 years ago and the Spurs had the number one overall pick to get Victor Wembanyama. And now here they are again with the second overall pick. I mean, there's a lot of different angles, and I do want to save some of it for next month when we do pass the outlet, get into it a little bit more, because that's going to creep up on us. I think one of the biggest things starting to look at mocks today that stands out to me is in the past few years, we've seen a lot of international players in like the top 10, top 15. It's a lot of not necessarily Americans, but a lot of American college, you know, players coming out of American colleges, which is what we're used to seeing. Also, I'm looking at this on Tankathon. The top 12 picks were all freshmen this last year at their respective universities. Now, some of them a little older. I think they might have redshirt. I don't know quite how that works as compared to basketball. But yeah, I mean, just to touch on Dallas one more time, we were sitting here, I think, even earlier this year with the Miller brothers, and a friend of the show, Ben Miller, lives in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. And he was telling us a little bit about a conspiracy theory where the team was trying to do bad and do bad things and maybe have them on the ropes with ownership groups to potentially tease a movement out of the city of Dallas. It was either move out of Dallas or build a new stadium. Something to do with gambling and casinos and lobbying and politics, and really, really messy and muddy. But now, I mean, it's looking like the Mavs might be on the up and up. You see how quickly, I mean, I say how quickly the Spurs have turned around. They did better this year than they did last year. Didn't make the playoffs still, but between Stephon Castle and Victor Wembanyama, I think they have a really bright future ahead of them. Now you add whoever they're going to get with the second pick to that young core. Of course, the Spurs are going to be right back into things. You had the announcement, Greg Popovich no longer going to be coaching in the league. He's going to be, I think, the president of basketball operations or general manager, something like that. But yeah, man, you mentioned the draft combine there. We did talk about this a little bit before the show, and I got to pull it up just because I know you love this guy. I know you love this guy, Caleb Love. There's some news that let's see which article I can pull here. Basically, Caleb Love didn't get an invite to the NBA draft combine after less than impressive, a camp. I guess they call it the G League Elite Camp. Caleb Love did not impress. And so I wanted to give you the floor. I know you just gave me the floor, Mike, but I want to give it right back to you just to comment on your boy Caleb Love down there in Tucson.
Now, throwing him out as my boy is a little crazy, Chris, because you know what comments I've already made from him. I do have love for the University of Arizona. Same with Arizona State, man. I'm an Arizona guy. I ride for the Valley. But Caleb Love was always one of those guys that kind of struck me as a player that would be successful in college, and he'll have some great flashes. Obviously, we know kind of what he did on Arizona's run through this most recent tournament. Can fill it up, can definitely drop points. But he doesn't have the full package to be a point guard in the NBA, unfortunately. I didn't think that ever since the time that he transferred from North Carolina over to Arizona. So it seems like his NCAA tournament run really didn't do him much favors because he didn't perform in this G League camp. So we were saying this before the show, he's going to get an opportunity. If anything, he's going to go to, you know, the summer league, have a chance to play and probably play a lot in the summer league. But I don't know if we're talking about Caleb Love making an opening day roster. We could see him on a G League team for sure. I think he has the talent to be given an opportunity, But at the end of the day, if he doesn't start changing certain aspects of his game, playing a little bit more within a team focused, you know, style, I would say, we know that the NBA is truly dominated nowadays by scoring point guards. That's fine. But I don't think his talent is at the same level as some of these major scoring guards in the league, like Jalen Brunson, Tyrese Maxey, and whatnot. So he's going to get a chance. But my boy, unfortunately, didn't get it to the draft combine. It's crazy, man, especially after the tournament that he had. But we'll see him. We'll see him on an NBA floor, I feel, at one point.
I definitely agree with everything you're saying there. And much like the Suns' new GM, I'm very much aligned with you. I know we kind of beat that horse to death on our Heat Check podcast live last week, so we won't go there again, folks. But I did find it interesting in this article that it mentioned that only five players from that G League camp were invited to stay for the combine. And the more we talk about it, how much does an NBA, I mean, the NFL draft combine, I feel like, has a lot more weight than any NBA draft combine does. So I don't think him not being at the combine is going to hurt. I don't think it hurt his chances to, you know, make an NBA roster one day. I think they were already pretty much set in stone. The rest is up to him. You were right, Mike. You know, he might be a little bit more of a ball dominant guard, a bit of a scoring guard. And as the ladies would say, you got to find you a man that can do both. He's got to be able to score. He's got to be able to dish. He's got to be a true point guard in this modern NBA. But yeah, I'm very excited for what's to come in the next month or so as we creep forward to the draft and the off season. And I don't know if we'll touch on it. I probably won't touch on it. I don't have anything in Reddit Reacts, but it's been reported today. I was hearing that the Suns are expected to announce their coaching hire within the next 2 to 4 weeks. They're taking their time because they can. No other NBA team is looking for a head coach right now. So they're going through their interview process. But as much as one can be excited about the offseason, I am. I'll say that much. But I'm rambling, Mike.
He's got the optimism. It's good to always have the optimism. And it's smart that the Phoenix Suns are taking their time for this coaching hire. But they also have to make sure they have somebody in the chair before the NBA draft happens. Because this is going to be one of those NBA drafts that is going to be key. I'm telling you, it's going to be absolutely key for the future of where this Phoenix Suns team is going. But I am sure we will get into that more in the offseason as things rolls along. But Chris, we got to take a look at what's been going on in the NBA playoffs. Right now, the Thunder and the Nuggets are fighting with 6 minutes left. Nuggets are up 7-40-33. That series is tied 2-2. But earlier today, we did see the Indiana Pacers knock off the number one seed in the East, Cleveland Cavaliers. Man, especially after that game four showing or no showing by Cleveland, for the Pacers to finish it out in five, I think that really made sense. And I think morale for Cleveland has been low ever since they've been dealing with those injuries to a multitude of guys, man. Evan Mobley has been dinged up. DeAndre Hunter missed some time. We know Darius Garland missed a couple of different games as well. But Indiana closing this out, man, they're going to be on the road again for the Eastern Conference Finals. But you got to like their chances the way they've been playing right now. But let's stay in the East once again. The New York Knicks, 3-1 series lead after coming back once again by double digits. I think I saw they were the first or second team, and it's been like 30 plus years, to ever come back from 14 point deficits to win games. And obviously game one and game two, they were down by 20. The Knicks look like a juggernaut right now. And obviously we know the most recent news, unfortunately, is that Jason Tatum has torn his Achilles. So he is out for the rest of the playoffs. And honestly, Chris, he might be out all of next year until the playoffs, if it does come to that. But then the last series that's still going on, Minnesota leads the Golden State Warriors 3-1. I think I had a feeling that Minnesota would pull out this series no matter what, but with Stephen Curry going down, and it sounds like he wouldn't be back until game six at the earliest, this one might be another five-game series. But Chris, overall, full view, how are you liking the playoffs so far, and what's been catching your eye, man?
Man, it's been fun to watch, honestly, especially here in the conference semifinals. I'd say the Timberwolves-Warriors series is probably the least intriguing, just especially since Steph Curry went out. I mean, Jimmy Butler's doing the best he can, but even he isn't in great health right now, and they really don't have too much help. They just have a bunch of role players, and it's showing that they can't get over the hump. Staying in the West, the intriguing series of the Thunder and the Nuggets, which every time I say Thunder Nuggets, it sounds like it's like a side dish at a fun restaurant or something. I don't know. But I think it's interesting. You have the number one seed, the young guns, the Thunder, exciting. Everyone loves Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, Chet Holmgren, and the like, against the rugged veteran, been to the mountaintop, playoff experience Nuggets. And the Nuggets are kind of a testament of like kind of that mentality that the regular season might not matter as much as long as you're competitive to get a high enough seed to have home court advantage in the first round. And then, you know, kind of see what happens from there. I honestly, like, I don't like really like either of these teams very much. I kind of love to hate the Nuggets though, but I respect them, you know, kind of in the same way I always felt about Kobe Bryant watching him play. It's like, I wouldn't necessarily call Jokic a dirty player. He just kind of plays. He kind of is just nonchalant and he just kind of throws his weight around sometimes. And I think there's might still for me be some lingering feelings, you know, due to the series with the Suns and him ripping the ball out of Ishbia's hands, but respect for Jamal Murray. Aaron Gordon, Arizona ties. He's hit some big shots. He helped me hit a parlay. So really like a lot about Aaron Gordon there. Going over to the East, man, I watched the end of that Cavaliers-Pacers game today. The Pacers were up 6. Donovan Mitchell got fouled on a 3-point shot, had a chance to bring the game within 3. Mike, he missed all 3 free throws at the line, and that's when you knew it was over. It was breaking, I think, news today or yesterday. Donovan Mitchell had an MRI scan, nagging ankle injury, wasn't 100% healthy, probably wouldn't have been out there if it was the regular season, but in the playoffs, you take the gloves off, you do what you have to do. You mentioned the other myriad of injuries they had: DeAndre Hunter, Evan Mobley, Colin Sexton, right? No, he's off the team.
Yeah, he's in Utah now.
The other guard,
Darius Garland.
Thank you. They missed, I think, 2 or 3 games of this series, and it just they never had a chance to get back into it once Donovan Mitchell. Yeah, that's their you know, shining light, if you will, and it's just tough. But the Pacers making the Eastern Conference Finals for the second year in a row, and that brings me to the last matchup here. This series is over with Jason Tatum going down. Even at the time in the game he went down, when I was watching that last night, that game was over. The Knicks had completed the comeback. There wasn't enough time left. Jason Tatum was going ISO ball, getting locked up, taking bummy shots. And the Achilles is just I don't want to call it icing on the cake because that sounds mean, but it was just the straw that broke the camel's back. How about that one for an idiom? It was done. It's done. Whether Boston somehow rallies to win the next game out of sheer will and inspiration, the series is over. The Knicks will win this in 6 or 7 games, and that'll be that, or I guess 5 or 6 games, probably, in my estimation. But very excited. I think it's interesting that in the Eastern Conference, the top 2 seeds are about to be balanced. We're about to see a 3-4 matchup to see who ends up in the NBA Finals. And I don't know. I remember, Mike, we were sitting here, I think it was last month, maybe the month before, thinking it would be, you know, Celtics or Cavs in the finals against the Thunder or the Lakers, I think we were talking about. I don't even remember. But now, you know, anything could happen. And I'm just excited that we have competitive playoff basketball to watch, even though we don't have the – I'm going to keep saying it, even though we don't have the Suns to watch, we still got some good basketball.
And this playoffs have honestly been incredible, even with some of the first round series going only 4 or 5. Man, you really see the spotlight on the best players in the league, and the competitiveness is just ramped up so much. You can truly tell. I mean, the aggression just goes through the roof. Guys are getting into little tiffs, little pushing matches, which always happens. Always seems like Draymond Green is involved in a couple of them. But I mean, yeah, I got to talk on the New York Knicks, right? The New York Knicks, as Stephen A. would say. But man, the true, I think, magical move that the New York Knicks made was trading Julius Randle for Carl Anthony Towns and matching him up with Mitchell Robinson. I know Mitchell Robinson missed a good amount of the start of the season, but Mitchell Robinson is your classic kind of defensive center who boards. And I think last game he had like four or five offensive rebounds within a 10-minute stint. And having those second chance opportunities always gives you some extra juice on the offensive side. But Jalen Brunson is on another level through the playoffs. I think he is third overall in points per game at 30.1. He's trying to set his own standard in regard to best players on the planet. And he has been doing it far and few between comparative to some other guys, I will say, that we had more higher expectations with. Chris, I mean, I thought it was a no-brainer that the Cleveland Cavaliers would kind of walk to the Eastern Conference Finals, but I thought the Boston Celtics would go back, face the Thunder, and repeat this year. But with Jason Tatum sidelined, it's over. I know the Celtics have a lot of depth, but the way that the New York Knicks are playing right now, man, that's going to be a fun Eastern Conference Finals, especially the same way how the Pacers are playing. I don't care about what happens to Timberwolves, Warriors. I think you were kind of aligned with that. Whoever wins this Thunder Nuggets series is going to make the finals. Let's say that. The championship pedigree of the Nuggets is obviously on full display right now. They're up 9. It's been kind of going back and forth. But they've been showing their ability to go on the road and win multiple times. And there's something about the difference of playoff basketball, and we're seeing it, I would say, from the Thunder's perspective in regard to their offensive work. I was talking to you on our runs on Sunday how disappointed I was, I would say, in the last couple of minutes in game one, how it became isocentric ball. They were running really lazy action to get SGA to the top and not really give him any room to attack off of, you know, a defender running after them. The picks were weak. When SGA had the ball, Christian Brown or whoever they had on him were just right in front of him and forcing him to make really, really tough plays, and nobody helped him out down the stretch. And I think that's a perfect time to transition into the outlet point guard. We got a couple of guys who have been clutch in the NBA playoffs to start this 2025 NBA playoff season. It has been incredible. And Chris, I focused on some Valley tie guys, and we'll get into why they have Valley ties. Two of them you'll know for sure, but one of them you might be, what? Why is he on this? But it's actually the first one, Chris. The absolute insane comeback from the Indiana Pacers in game two to steal the first two on the road. Tyrese Haliburton with the little Jimmy Jam step back on Ty Jerome, who has Phoenix Suns ties. And man, I think that was the nail in the coffin almost at that point in that series right there. Winning two on the road, going back home. It's an uphill task for the other team. But then we have Chet Holmgren selling. One of the sells of the past couple of years, I will say. Horrible transition defense to Arizona's own, the University of Arizona, Aaron Gordon, with the game winner. A stunner, because the Oklahoma City Thunder were up the entirety of that game. But it goes back to basically what I was saying. Poor, just one-man show offense that didn't work. And here's Aaron Gordon once again in game three, tying it, pushing it to overtime. And we know what happened. The Nuggets really took that over. And guys, you know, we'd be remiss if we didn't include our own guy, Mikal Bridges, making the clutch steal in overtime in game one. And then doing the same thing in game two on a little bit of a different level. Jason Tatum kind of getting sloppy with the ball right here. Mitchell Robinson doing his best to stay in front of him. But I don't know where Jason Tatum is going on the corner right there. And Mikal gets the steal. Beautiful, like, overhead football pass right there to Jalen Brunson, too. But, Chris, let's roll back to the top. Tyrese Haliburton. Tell the people why we included him and how he has Valley ties first.
Well, this goes back to the 2020 NBA draft, the dreaded 2020 NBA draft. The Suns were looking to add some size, felt like they were fairly comfortable with their guard play. And they decided two picks ahead of where Tyrese Haliburton was taken, not by the Pacers, I might add. He was taken by the Kings originally. But the Suns instead decided to draft Sticks, Jalen Smith. He's not terrible, but he's no all-star in this league. Let's say that he's not anywhere close to who Tyrese Haliburton has become. And, you know, Suns fans, we look at plays like this and we think, how would, Hallie play with Devin Booker, and how would that look? Now, obviously Suns have a long history of drafting the wrong guys and the coulda, woulda, shouldas, but man, Mike, this play specifically, I've not really watched many NBA playoff games start to finish, but I like to tune in at the end, especially if I got a little dough on it. And I was watching this one on my phone and I audibly yelled, I gasped. And my wife yelled up the stairs, "Are you okay? Are you okay?" I'm like, "Yeah, Tyrese Haliburton just hit a crazy game winner." And she was not super amused because she thought I hurt myself or something. But wow, dude, wow. Missing the free throw, getting your own rebound, pulling it out. And then he did the big balls celebration after this as well. He was hanging his nuts on the Cleveland Cavaliers. And man, what a play. I mean, and going back to what you had mentioned, just imagine, Mike, imagine Haliburton in the purple and orange, man. It's tough to watch things like that. Over another, like you said, mentioned another guy with Valley ties, Ty Jerome, who's really stepped it up and been a great sixth man for the Cavs, honestly.
Yeah, Ty Jerome has been one of the catalysts for the Cleveland Cavaliers this year. Kenny Atkinson's won Coach of the Year for a reason. Obviously, they just hammered through the Eastern Conference this year. And like I said, I thought they were a surefire team to make the Eastern Conference Finals. I didn't think they would make it out of the East, but when you're playing with that much confidence down the stretch of a season, it seems like you'll be able to put it all together. But we always say it, the hindsight's 20/20 when it comes down to Tyrese Haliburton. But the big problem, I would say, Chris, is that this guy was the one that was pinpointed for the Phoenix Suns, I believe, at the 13th or 14th pick in that draft, where it just made sense to bring in somebody like that and give him a chance, especially with where our point guard play was at that point. You know, you're talking about Ricky Rubio just being brought into the helm. Like, you're telling me that a possible, you know, 6'4" plus point guard can be added into a room and grow and not be asked to do too much to start, especially because that Jalen Smith pick he wasn't ever going to be a player that the Suns were going to look to within the first couple of seasons that he was on the team. So you're telling me we couldn't have pinpointed him a little bit earlier? But I mean, it is what it is. Maybe that's why James Jones is no longer the GM. But my favorite thing about this play here, Chris, is, you know, there are some guys, if you think and you see this rebound, which is kind of tipped out by Miles right there, there are some guys, I think, who corral this basketball right here, and their first instinct is, well, I'm close to the basket, let me turn and just try and put it up as fast as possible. But Tyrese Haliburton is a smart player and he understood, let me just pull it out and reset, if anything. You know, then your mindset changes when you see that you have high one-on-one coverage. Get into your dribble moves and create that space for yourself. And you see Max Strus not really committing to any kind of double team up top. He's flashed down there on Nesmith. He's protecting the drive, so you're going to live with a three-point shot like that at the end of the day. But my favorite part, I think, after this shot was he talked about how he was infamously named the most overrated player in the NBA this year, and he said, overrate that. So been loving to see the Indiana Pacers. It's one of those small market teams that you are totally okay with being successful and, you know, having a chance to go win their town and their city a championship, but it's going to be it's going to be a tall task for them against the New York Knicks. But Chris, let's roll into Aaron Gordon here after this final shot attempt. I don't even know was that a shot? Like, what the hell was that? But Aaron Gordon, man, what have you been liking from his postseason so far? Because these two players are just from the Thunder series, he had that infamous dunk put back in the Clippers series, which really changed the outlook on that series as well, too.
Yeah, man, Aaron Gordon, just a solid role player. I mean, I love his catch and shoot, man. This hitting multiple big game-winning shots, the pass from Westbrook right into his motion, no dribble, straight up with it, full confidence. You know, you can try and make the argument of there's still time left. You only needed a 1 point. But, you know, guys know when they're open and they know what they're capable of. That is a smart shot there off of the setup from Russell Westbrook. And like you had pointed out at the top, Chet Holmgren sagging, man. Like the only thing, I wouldn't even say, you know, better. I would say maybe different that he maybe could have done. And this is me being, you know, maybe nitpicky. I think he did the right decision. Could have pump fake Chet here and had a wide open lane for a left-handed finish at the rim. But he made it. And so we're not going to ask those questions. And we wouldn't even be looking at this clip had he not made that. So big shot from Aaron Gordon. And honestly, man, he's doing the intangibles. He's what you absolutely want in a role player. He can play pretty solid defense, grab you some boards, smart with the ball. He'll make the pass when he needs to. And when called upon and has the opening, he's going to take that big shot. And you can count him to knock it down, man. Like, it's crazy. A lot of people still think of Aaron Gordon from his time with the Orlando Magic and being in the slam dunk contest, but he's not just a dunker, man. He is a pure hooper. Only other thing that stands out to me from this clip is holy lane violations at the beginning of this. It's like the NBA, there are just certain rules that the NBA is just comfortable blatantly ignoring. And it kind of grinds my gears as a basketball purist.
That's true. I will say they did call lane violation in the last game on Jokic because it was so bad.
There you go.
He almost got pump faked. But yeah, in regard to this play, the only reason why I feel like Chet Holmgren is sagging so far off here is because you're worried about the drive possibility of Russell Westbrook. But I think, dude, you got to know your personnel. Jalen Williams is going to be one of these guys who's perennially in the all defensive, you know, categories, making first or second team. I'm trusting the length of Jalen Williams to force Russell Westbrook into a tough, tough shot at the basket if he does try to drive all the way there. So as the last man in defense, you got to pick up the empty man. Like the big unfortunate thing about this series, this specific play here is Chet's got to make those two fucking free throws to start, right? Then you're talking about a 3-point game. This shot is putting you into overtime. So you live with that. You can go and get it done after that. But yeah, big sell by Chet. Unfortunately, he doesn't make any of the free throws and then he gives up the open shot. But also, I mean, you can just see kind of some of these trailing guys, like, you know, there's not a lot of time left. They're pushing. Alex Caruso, let's go. Like, head down, start helping out a little bit. It was just kind of a muckety-muck play, unfortunately, for the Thunder. But hey, Aaron Gordon doing it. I like what you said. He's a hooper's hooper, Aaron Gordon, man. He really does all of the little things to help that team, you know, be the perennial, you know, the team that's in the title hunt every single year, it seems like, for now. And he did it again in game three, man. And once again, it's Chet. Like, where are you, Chet? After you see Shea go up to take Jamal Murray at the top of the key, is that just not communication? Are guys not telling? You see Jalen Williams point over at Aaron Gordon, but Chet, where are you flashing to? Like, in the last minute of any game, giving any space to anybody, I don't care if it's even Aaron Gordon, who has shot the ball a lot better from deep over the past couple of years, you cannot fall asleep and lose your man in the last 1 minute of the game. But Chris, yeah, what were you seeing from this play here?
Yeah, I mean, you really nailed it. It's like Chet, it's almost like he's counting players here, trying to, and just so late to close out. And I don't, even if he gets a hand up sooner there, as far away as he is, I don't know that it really matters. Just bad look, man. Yeah, I get you want to help with Jamal Murray, but you take one too many steps and then you're just lost in space. And that just shows you how fast paced the NBA game is, where just literally 1.5 seconds of Chet Holmgren being out of position, Aaron Gordon has enough time and enough space to get that shot off. and it's huge. And granted, there's still a lot of time left on the clock, but you're in Denver. That's a massive momentum swing for a team that had been trailing the entire game, who has fought back into it. It's demoralizing for what seems to be a now tired Oklahoma City team. And that maybe that's all I can really chalk it up to for Chet Holmgren is he's a big guy, long limbs, and maybe at the end of the fourth quarter here, he's just a little tired, a little out of sorts, and that can make the difference in a game, man. And I think that is also the difference between a young team that's learning and gaining experience versus a team that's been to the mountaintop and knows what it takes to close out big games and make deep playoff runs.
That's so true. And we will give Chet Holmgren his credit. He is leading the playoffs with 2.5 blocks per game. He is a force around the basket. You do probably have to chalk it up to just the young nature as well. The one thing I will say, after he sees that Shea takes him and he sees Aaron Gordon, I don't know if you can see it, Chris, but he pinpoints Aaron, then looks back up. He needed to, as soon as he saw Aaron Gordon open in the corner, keep your head down, go run after him right away. Because you looking back up to where the coverage already is, what does that do for your team? Like, you got to go cover that post over there. You already have the coverage. Don't look back up. You see it, go. That's the only thing. And those are, you know, the little things that guys learn as the game goes along. You have to remember Chet dealt with some injuries to start his career as well. But he, once again, has been a key catalyst, like we were talking about Ty Jerome, for the reason why the Oklahoma City Thunder were the number one seed and the number one team in the Western Conference all year long. But enough of that, Chris. We got to go to our boy, Mikal Bridges. I was watching game two down the stretch, thinking to myself, wow, are the Knicks going to do it again? And once again, Mikal Bridges makes the game-winning play. And I almost shed a tear because I miss my guy, Chris. I miss my guy. What have you been liking out of Mikal's run in the playoffs so far? And honestly, we did touch on the New York Knicks a little bit, but the Knicks as a whole, man, what are you thinking?
Yeah, Knicks are an interesting team, honestly. Jalen Brunson is a monster. Karl Anthony Towns, really, really good center. Ripe for criticism for sure. But honestly, man, like, Mikal Bridges, he is sticking true to his form of just being a solid lockdown defender, super reliable. He got a bit of a reputation during his time with the Nets as being a more prolific scorer than I think a lot of people thought. He started to grow that reputation a little bit in his waning days with the Phoenix Suns. But with the Knicks, hasn't really been called on to play that role too much, but he was instrumental in their game four win last night, where he was knocking down some big shots with his little fadeaway jumper and just crazy hang time, hanging, keeping the ball up at the top of the release, and just beautiful, beautiful buckets. Mikal Bridges is a supremely disciplined player, and you can tell he's one that's worked on his craft. I think another thing that I love about Mikal Bridges is one of Tallman's favorite things as well in any player in any sport is his availability. He is a perennial NBA Iron Man, takes care of his body, plays the right way, plays smart, I'm not going to say he doesn't play aggressively, but doesn't play over aggressively to the point where he's getting himself injured. And man, I mean, huge steal, huge block. You can rely on Mikal Bridges to lock down the other team's best player. And for him to get this steal on, what was it, Jaylen Brown, is probably people would probably consider him to be the Celtics' second best player, the Robin to Jason Tatum's Batman, huge. And the block on Tatum himself. So he took off their number one and number two guys. I know we're talking about Bridges, but Tatum got caught before the injury just doing too much. And that was a big thing at the end of the last game too, before the injury, is he was trying to do iso ball, doing a lot of ball handling and getting a little fumbly with it. And you see it in these clips here. He turns it over on basically a triple team by Mikal Bridges coming with the help defense and getting the clutch block. And I love Mikal Bridges. You're never going to make me hate Mikal Bridges. He could go beyond the Los Angeles Lakers and I'm still going to love this guy.
Ooh. Man, that's crazy. I mean, I will say that, yeah, that was Steve Nash for me when he went to the Lakers. Loved him. Didn't want them to be successful. But there's something about the New York Knicks being good, Chris, which is always good for the NBA. That market, when the Knicks are thriving, is just special for this league. And to have one of our own guys who helped us make the improbable 2021 NBA Finals run being another key catalyst, like I've already talked about with a couple of guys in Mikal Bridges, it's special. And it's something that, you know, warms my heart, especially as a Phoenix Suns fan when we have no dog in the fight. Am I pulling for the Knicks, though, you ask me, Chris? Remember, we did say I transitioned my fandom to the Boston Celtics, so now I'm going to be out again. No, I'm just kidding. I'm always pulling for Mikal Bridges. I'm always pulling for our guys to have success, especially if they were high-character guys. They helped us be successful, win a lot of games, and didn't leave with disgrace, I guess, if you want to call that, right? Mikal Bridges was traded for Kevin Durant. He didn't want out. He wanted to be a part of the Phoenix Suns, I think, for as long as he could. And he had built a loyal fan base in Phoenix. And we miss him, man. I don't know if there's anything else I can really say than either than we miss Mikal Bridges. We miss his intangibles. And we're still trying to search for that guy right now. You know, we got a young kid in Ryan Dunn that we're hopeful for. I think there's a long way to go in that regard. But in the meantime, I'm having a lot of fun watching Mikal Bridges, you know, do his thing for the New York Knicks. And I'm having a hell of a time with this NBA playoffs right now. And I can't wait to see kind of what happens next. I will say once this tape airs, or once this finishes, I'm going straight to the couch to watch the second half of the Thunder Nuggets game because it is now 56-54 Nuggets. I don't even know what's going to happen with this series, Chris. I really don't know who's going to win it at the end of the day, but I think it's going seven games, and that's all you can ask for in the NBA playoffs. But Chris, that was the outlet point guard. It's time to transition into my favorite Reddit Reacts. What do you got for us this week?
Ooh, Mike, I got a few for you. And I think I might have to cut one, but I think I got a bonus here. Maybe a little sloppy, but I just have to ask you and ask the chat if I know you're going to go watch the rest of the second half of this game. It is halftime right now. I got my bet slip here, Mike. Am I cooked? Am I cooked or am I cooking? SGA not really putting up the numbers yet, but he could do it in the second half. Let me see if I can get a zoom in here. There we go. That might make it a little easier to look at.
I don't think you're cooked.
Got no. A chance. I got,
you
a,
got
chance.
A chance. Jalen, one more, 100%. Jamal Murray, two more, better. Aaron Gordon, yeah, I think the one that you got to worry about right now because you need, what, 24 more out of Shea?
Yeah. Yeah.
But you did the right spread. You did alternate points, rebounds, and assists. So you're talking about all of his stats. I think you're okay, man. Let it ride. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, we'll see how it plays out. I was over the weekend sharing with you my list of never bet again, and SGA is on that list, but for assists only. Like, don't do an SGA, like, because I think I had him for like 6 or 8 assists, and he's a point guard, so you think, you know, he's gonna get assists, but some nights SGA knows that he just has to take over and he's gonna put up 30, 40 points. And I probably just caught him on one of those nights, was the only leg in my parlay that lost. That's usually how guys end up on my never bet again list. But yeah, I think you're right. I think the only one I might be a little worried about is Westbrook, kind of, you know, because he comes off the bench, but he only needs 8 more points, rebounds, assists combined. So the way he plays, historically, a triple-double machine, I think he can do it for me. So we'll see how that shakes out. But Mike, I have the more traditional Reddit Reacts here, and this one is from the Suns Reddit, and it ties into exactly where we just left off with the outlet point guard. Man, I think this is a lot of us in the Valley right now. Just this is from r/Suns. The user according_1811 5 days ago said sigh, ... And it's the, for audio only listeners, it's the picture of cartoon Wolverine looking at the picture frame. And in the picture frame is Mikal Bridges on the Phoenix Suns. He is out doing his thing with the New York Knicks. You just saw a little sampling of what he's been doing for them. Mike, are you optimistic for a reunion one day with the Suns and Mikal Bridges?
Ooh, that's a great question. I think so, Chris. I really think so. I think Mikal Bridges has an affinity for the Valley. I think he enjoyed his time playing here. I think he had a great time playing with Devin Booker. The issue is going to be, what does this team truly look like? If we could pay him what he wants, I think he would have no second doubts about coming back. But yeah, I mean, look at that energy. Look at that excitement, man. We need that back. We haven't had that in the past 2.5, 3 years. But the big thing about this, Chris, is I'm kind of getting excited, not because of the factor that we're going to have to trade Kevin Durant, but the factor that we're going to get to have those discussions about, was that the right trade? What really happened? And how do we move forward from that? Because if you truly remember, if you think back, especially here on Valley Sports Plug, we had those discussions about, did Matt Ishbia get taken advantage of? And Phoenix Suns fans flamed the hell out of us. So you're basically kind of, karma's coming back at you. All right. So just wait till we have those discussions. I hope you bring that same energy. Maybe we'll throw it on Reddit for them to react on there. How about that?
I love it, Mike. We call them our friends over on r/Suns. We love them. I mean, you're right. We did talk on this, probably on this very podcast, about we would love to have Kevin Durant. We just did not want to give up Mikal Bridges for it. Love him or hate him, most people hate him. Robert Sarver did not want to give up Mikal Bridges for Kevin Durant. Ishbia's here for 2.5 seconds. And what happens? We give up Mikal Bridges for Kevin Durant. Now, you know, again, like we were talking about with their draft woes and not taking Haliburton, not taking Rondo, not taking Luol Deng, whoever it is, you know, everything has to happen to get to where we're at now. And it's all about what happens next. And the Suns could be on an upward trajectory in the next 3 to 5 years. And, you know, we just say that the Kevin Durant saga was all part of our road to get there. But hindsight's 2020, man. And if I could go back, I don't think I would want them to do that trade again. And I don't know, Matt Ishbia might say the same thing, but the same conversation we were having, had the Suns won a championship with KD in one of the last three seasons, we probably would have been okay with it. But again, coulda, shoulda, woulda, those are the conversations and the things we love to speculate about. But Mike, this was one that was very important to me to get into Reddit Reacts. I had saw this story a few weeks back and just hadn't had a chance to slide it into any of our streams or any of the conversations we were having, but Pass the Outlet is the perfect venue with it. I had to go and find a very random tweet just by searching through X to find this, but I'm not a big Adam Silver fan. You know that that's not my guy. He wants to revamp the NBA All-Star format. And this tweet from @AwfulAnnouncing the report, I guess, from their website. I don't know anything about Awful Announcing, but this says Adam Silver confirms NBC pushing for America versus World format for the 2026 NBA All-Star Game. I had seen other reporting not throwing NBC under the bus, just saying that Adam Silver was looking at an international format, not even just America versus the world. Although I think that if you are to do international, that'd probably be the most viable, just because if you did some type of regional tournament thing, I don't know how that would work, but we know Adam Silver loves tournaments. He loves them. The 2025 All-Star Game, because it's in February, they had some weird like first to 40, which isn't the first time we've had that kind of stipulation in an All-Star Game, but the winner of the rookie showcase or Rising Stars, the winner of the Rising Stars game got to be in the All-Star tournament, if you will. And there was like basically four teams. I hated it. And it was terrible. There was more commercial time than actual game time. We saw more Kevin Hart than we did LeBron James. It was terrible. People hated it. And now Adam Silver, instead of like, Mike, for me, I'm going to let you chime in here, but for me, East versus West, it's not rocket science. Fuck.
At this point, yes. The one thing I will give credit to the NBA and Adam Silver with is they've been trying to be innovative and figure something out, because the iterations that we've been getting for not only just the All-Star game, but All-Star weekend has just not been working for the past decade, man. Maybe two decades, right? I'm worried if you try to do America versus the world format, because And especially if you try to do it in the tournament format where it's like, okay, Eastern Europeans and Canadians or whatever. To fill in these teams, are you telling me that you're going to just have to get some guys that truly aren't worthy of being in the All-Star game? That's my concern about it. Because then you're talking about kicking out guys who truly deserved it. They just didn't have a spot because the America team is already full or the European team is already full. You know what I'm saying? In today's NBA, the amount of guys from overseas, it works. There's great, great players that come from out of the States. You could probably find a way to do it. But I'm sorry. If you're telling me that, you know, Jakob Poeltl has to be one of the players on the team just to fill it out because he is from that part of the world that you're trying to have in that team, that doesn't work. I think now, and Chris, you might have said it perfectly, at this point, you've done so much tinkering. Go back to the original thing. East versus West, see how it responds. Because I'm 100% with you as well. Last year, one of the worst NBA All-Star games I've ever watched. And I haven't watched full games in a number of years as well because the product has been so bad. But last year was absolutely horrific. Kevin Hart was an absolute cringe fest. And nothing worked for Sunday. Saturday was okay, but Sunday just did not work. So East versus West, bring it back. Why not?
It seems like the easiest way to reset, and you can try and innovate later on down the road. I agree with you. Adam Silver's trying to be innovative. He's trying to tinker with the NBA product and make it something that's marketable to the whole world. I get that. But I think it is a very fine line between gimmicky and innovation. And Adam Silver is right on that line. I mean, Mike, we have an in-season tournament now. We have a play-in tournament. We had an NBA All-Star tournament. I don't know what Adam Silver's hard-on is with tournaments, man. He loves them. He loves it. Pretty soon, the whole NBA season's just going to be one massive tournament. I mean, come on.
Just how about this? Let's stop having the players be one and done. We just have guys come straight from high school into the NBA. And then we can have like a faux college tournament of just the kids that came to the league that would have been in college. How about that, Adam? It's crazy. I mean, Chris, I just had to really go into the back of my mind to remember who won the NBA in-season tournament this year. It was the Milwaukee Bucks. Are you kidding me? It's so insignificant. And especially at the place and the time frame of where it happens in the NBA schedule, I still feel is like you're missing an opportunity to really take advantage there. How about this? We get rid of the NBA All-Star game and then just do your tournament as the in-season tournament as the All-Star whatever. And then you find ways to revamp, you know, the Saturdays so we don't have to be put through this BS of a game anymore. Don't do any more tournaments. Just have your team, you know, if they make it to the NBA Cup championship, they get an extra 5 to 7 days off before they come back from, you know, the All-Star break, if you want to call it that. But I don't know. It's just not working. But I am happy that the NBA playoffs are working right now. So at the end of the day, as long as that is working, we'll try and figure things out.
Yeah, I think as far as NBA tournaments go, I think the playoffs are one that Adam Silver won't be able to fuck up, luckily enough for us. But yeah, I'm curious to see. I mean, obviously, I think the angle here with NBC is they are commonly the host of the Olympic broadcast. 2026 is an Olympic year. It's the Winter Olympics, though. So I think I get that's why they're trying to tie in the international angle to it. I just don't think it's going to work. But obviously, no official announcement yet, thank God. I guess we'll have to see what happens. But last thing I'll say about that is I would like to see it go back to East versus West. I think that's the easiest thing to do. But I honestly didn't really hate the captain draft, you know, schoolyard pickup format either. But just play one All-Star game. And you can do the at when time expires, you know, first team to whatever. I don't remember exactly the Kobe rule or whatever that was all about, but I don't know. Not a fan of the international tournament and the constant tinkering. But Mike, you had kind of mentioned this. Got I think one or two more here for you. I thought this one was pretty funny. This is your boy Tyrese Halliburton. This is on r/NBA memes. Pop_Joe. Tyrese is on demon time with the eye emoji. And it's a picture of Michael Jordan from The Last Dance with Tyrese Halliburton's face superimposed on it. And it, in the upper left-hand corner of the graphics, it says, surveyed players believe Tyrese Halliburton is overrated. Anonymous player survey from The Athletic. 13 of 90 players surveyed felt Tyrese Halliburton was the most overrated. So honestly, not the largest number. But he took that personally, apparently, and he balled out in game two, again in game five. Honestly, just had one bad game, game four, I believe it was, where he only had 4 points. Kind of got locked up by the Cavs. But man, again, Tyrese Halliburton, superstar?
Getting there. Very close. The one thing that I always love is when players get backlash or are labeled as things like this, the most overrated in the league. And this isn't even from just media fans or critics. This is literally from players, right? It's a player vote that says, these guys, your peers, think that you are the most overrated player in the NBA. And then you come out, you don't even make comments to start, and all you do is show up, show out, and literally make one of the most clutch plays in the playoffs this year. You have to nod your hat and give a whole bunch of credit to guys who do that. And they back up their work before they come out and attack or address items like this, right? He makes that incredible play in game two to give the Pacers a 2-0 lead going back to Indiana, and then makes the comment and says, well, I mean, what, overrate that? It's incredible. I absolutely love it. I don't know. I mean, having most overrated as something that is voted on by the NBA players is kind of crazy to me. Because, like, why are you having your peers pinpoint who you think is what is not where they are or where they should be? Everybody who makes it to the NBA has had some kind of journey. And for the guys who are considered all-stars and the upper echelon players to be telling them that they're not as good as they have got to the level they are, I mean, are you trying to purposely tear people down? Like, that's kind of crazy. But then that shows you the mental fortitude of guys like Tyrese Halliburton to overcome their peers saying something like this and to absolutely show out. I love that this is on Michael Jordan in The Last Dance. Now, this is giving me some juices. Might be turning on Netflix tonight and watching episode one and do the rewatch here soon. But yeah, Halley, he's been incredible, man.
Yeah, man. Ever since I saw live him hit that, get his own rebound, hit that 3-point step back, like, I was sold on Halliburton. Man, clutch player. Honestly, everyone has a different objective measure of what it means to be overrated. And having only 13 of the 90 players, I think it's like, obviously, I don't think that's a widespread consensus among NBA players that he's the most overrated. But either way, he's clearly using it as fuel. You mentioned going back and watching The Last Dance on Netflix. I might also mention something that is on my watch list is the Gilbert Arenas, Javaris Crittenden documentary that they just recently put out about that whole incident. Guns in the locker room, gambling, drama. A coworker of mine suggested that today. I watched the trailer for it and I was intrigued. So I think there's going to be some conversations to have around that. But Mike, I think I got one more for us. I did pull for part of Reddit Reacts a very similar graphic to the one we showed at the top of the stream about the coincidences in trades translating into high draft picks. So won't share that one, but I will share this one because I think it's funny. And it also includes my very, very favorite person in the entire world, Mr. Adam Silver. This is from user at I'm Wiser on NBA memes. And it's a quote. A fake quote, perhaps, maybe, unverified, from Adam Silver. Yeah, Nico, look, LA needs a new star for the future. So trade Luka, and I'll make sure you get Flag. And very, very 90s, very LA noir here. Mike, again, could this have been a real conversation? Is this something that could have genuinely happened in the back rooms, in the shady back room deals of the NBA?
Yes, because Nico Harrison did a deal with the devil, and the devil is Adam Silver. Chris, the Luka Doncic trade at the end of the day, one of my favorite sayings, the end of the day, the way that they shopped him around, which was they didn't shop him around. If you knew that you were going to get off of that prolific of a player, the return that they got was just not comparable or comparable to anything that should have truly happened in a trade for Luka Doncic. Lack of draft picks, lack of true return in regard to comparable players. I like Anthony Davis. Anthony Davis has been a great player for a number of years, but he is getting up there, man, and he has had consistent injury issues. And you're talking about pairing him with Kyrie Irving, who now is dealing with his own injury issues, who's going to be out for probably 3 to 4 months of next season to start. And then you get the number one overall pick just dropped into your lap. I'm smelling it. It's a little fishy. It's, and I love a nice tinfoil hat. So, yeah, he made the deal with the devil. This is just ridiculous. 1.8% chance to win. And this literally has nothing to do with my disdain. I already talked about it. I don't have true disdain for Dallas Mavericks fans. I had disdain for Luka Doncic. But what the hell is this? This is crazy, man. This just doesn't make sense.
And that's it. It's a head scratcher. The whole thing going all the way back to the trade done in the middle of the night between two teams. If you wanted to trade Luka, that's already a head scratcher in and itself. But sure, you had your reasons. You didn't shop him. The I guess the running narrative is that the owner, whoever, someone in the Mavs organization was like, all right, well then go get me Anthony Davis. Like, very specific, Anthony Davis, Mr. Glass himself, the guy who in his very first game as a Dallas Maverick was injured and missed several weeks. Like, what are we talking about? It's just, and then to add the more of the shroud of mystery, Nico Harrison was very unavailable for the media to talk about this. He held a press conference where there were no cameras or audio recorders allowed. You just had to trust that the media was telling you exactly what had happened. And similar to the NBA draft, now this is where I kind of start to maybe have my, you know, put a hand on the tinfoil hat to start to take it off a little bit, because they supposedly use a third party accounting firm. There's several lawyers involved, there's reporters watching the ping pong balls, but and it would take a lot of people to be involved in this quote-unquote conspiracy to rig the NBA draft lottery. But you know, the NBA, man, is a multi-billion dollar enterprise. And with money comes power, comes influence. At the end of the day, although it is far-fetched, I don't think it's impossible. But I think for me, if I'm being honest with you and the people and the listeners, I don't think it was rigged. I really don't. It's just very sketchy. And I think unfortunate for the league, honestly, because it's not making them look too great. But Adam Silver is not going to comment on this at all. He's not going to give any credence to the conspiracy theories. He's just going to move on. But he looks like an alien. He looks like an alien. I don't like him.
He is part of the Illuminati. Yeah, Chris, it's not rigged. Come on. We just love to have those conversations. It still is kind of suspicious how these things kind of break down. I mean, we showed the multiple times that, you know, a big name player was traded, and then miraculously the team they were traded away from won the lottery the next year. But I mean, as you have more and more NBA drafts, more and more of that kind of stuff is probably going to happen. So it's just tough, man. The team that was supposed to be in flux and be worse than the Phoenix Suns for hopefully a couple of years, looks like they're reloading quicker than we hoped. But it's how the cookie crumbles.
It's how it goes, man. But that's all I got for Reddit Reacts tonight. A little bit of a shorter slate. But man, fun times ahead. Really excited to see what happens with the rest of the playoffs. But Mike, why don't you take us home, brother?
Yes, absolutely. Appreciate everybody joining us. We'll hit you guys with the outro real fast. Make sure you like and subscribe to this video. Follow us, Valley Sports Plug, here on YouTube. Follow us at all our socials at AZ_VSP. We appreciate you guys. It helps us out more than we know to grow and talk ball with all of you. We got a whole bunch of stuff coming here on Valley Sports Plug YouTube coming up. We got trivia. We got some roundtables. We got some draft coverage coming next month as well. And we'll be back at you guys with Pass the Outlet episode number 28 next month. But with that being said, this was Pass the Outlet episode number 27. I'm your co-host, Michael Benjamin. That's my wingman, Chris Patrick. We'll see you guys next time. Peace.
1, 2, 3, 4.
Ball is life, plain and simple. You know, ask any baller. If you know, you know.
The game has changed, but it's still the same. If you want it, go get it.
Shazam!
The inbounds pass comes into Jordan. Here's Michael at the foul line, the shot on Hilo.
Ah, the Bulls win! They win it!
Mike, you're honestly telling me that you're top five.
Yeah.
Top five of all time.
No question about it.
Booker, this is for the win. Got it. Wow.
The ruling on the floor is made basket.
You know, one thing's for sure. Over at Valley Sports Plug, you're never going to catch us slipping.
With the first overall pick, the Phoenix Suns select.
3, 2,